The Health Fix Podcast teaches you how to take charge of your health naturally by giving you the information you need to elevate your health.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Today's episode, I have a treat for you. I have Brad Kearns. He is the host of the Get Over Yourself podcast, New York Times bestseller of the Keto Reset Diet, Guinness World Record for setting the professional speed golfer record. We're going to talk about that. Number 3 ranked professional triathlete. He's a busy beaver and has written 20 books on his diet, health, peak performance, ancestral living, you name it, he's talked about it. He is one bad mofo on the mofo mission, which we have to talk about that as well. Optimizing male hormone function so he can maintain passion and competitive intensity throughout life. And he's got a lot of life left because he knows that he's 55 as of now. I love that he puts age on his website. His signature morning regimen is also up there with a 6-minute plunge into a chest freezer filled with 38 degrees water. Wow. That built some focus, discipline, and a natural hormone boost for sure. Brad, you're an inspiration. Thank you for coming on the Health Fix to chat with me.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited after hearing that biographical diatribe there. I can't believe it. I try not to be too busy. I guess we can all make ourselves sound busy if we write the right stuff down. But definitely, trying to balance life. And I think today, people of my age group anyway, since you announced my age, you know, something like half of my life was lived prior to the digital age. And so I have all these reference points of just sitting around after you're done working, or you power down your computer and you have hours of just relaxing or being outdoors or talking and socializing. Now everything's so different where we're constantly holding onto these devices. So when we're talking about health, the Health Fix podcast, or the stuff that I do with my Get Over Yourself podcast, one of my big areas, wishes to improve, needs to improve areas or areas of concern is this hyperconnectivity and this constant stimulation where, you know, we're overly busy, overly stimulated, and we forgot what it's like to live a healthy, balanced life. So I think that's one of the good aspects of getting out and exercising. Maybe that's why I still like it so much is, you know, I like to set goals and be athletic and have competitive intensity throughout life and go for the Guinness World Record, but also just leaving the home, leaving the indoor environment and going out there and doing something with your body is really precious now because we can be glued to the screen for hours and hours all day and then finish working and be glued to the screen again for hours.
Oh my goodness. Isn't that the truth? Yeah. It's like completely, I love being outside. Let me just put it that way. I grew up also in an era where the internet was maybe just starting to come out. And, you know, my mom would be like, come home when the lights come on. I don't want to see you. I don't want to smell you. I don't want you near me. Get the heck out of here. And so I learned to play outside and have fun outside. And I think that those of us who have this kind of inbred in us to get outside and play definitely, you know, have that aspect of seeing the value of being outside and just being free. That's probably the word, free. I feel like we're tied to technology. And yes, we're talking right now over technology and all of that. But I feel like at this point, we need to disconnect ourselves a little bit more and get out and get fit. I'm a huge proponent of that, of course, as you are. And, you know, have fun with life. And speaking of that, now you have a record in speed golfing. And what interests me about this is that I've always, you know, let's call it puttered with golf. I'm not great at it. And I'm bored easy with it. So I thought like, oh my God, speed golfing. That would be like genius. So how'd you get into speed golfing? That sounds like amazing.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe you've teed me up with that huge question. You will wind up the wind up toy on the back of my body and I will go off as long as people want to listen to the greatest sport in the world. And you describe it really well. The sport of golf is beautiful. It's so technical. You're out there experiencing nature, but it's certainly not considered to be an athletic or a fitness endeavor. And that's too bad because you're spending so many hours out there. It'd be nice if you got a workout too. So a long time ago, maybe 30 plus years ago, the great American Olympic mile runner Steve Scott was also a golfing enthusiast, and he went out and played a course in a half an hour and broke the Guinness World Record for the fastest round of golf. And he was just taking one club and hockey pucking it through the hole, and he got 103 or 106 on the score, and he was sprinting around. But then this thing evolved into an actual competitive sport where you have a proper golf tournament where you tee off and they keep your score, and you get a par, you get a bogey, and you add it up, and you shot a 74, an 81, or whatever. But at the same time, they time the athlete as they complete the course. And so in a speed golf tournament, you add up your strokes and your minutes on the course to get a total speed golf score. So for example, the best score I ever had in a tournament was I shot a 78 in 47 minutes on a championship course. It was a great round for me, and I was running fast the whole time. So my score was 125, 78 plus 47. And you realize quickly that it's not about just running around at breakneck speed and hitting the ball really fast. You have to shoot a good score, or you're going to get your butt kicked by someone who's playing good golf. And so it's a real Zen experience where you have to move quickly, but you also have to center yourself every time and execute a good golf shot like you know how to do when you have 4 hours to play. And that's what makes it so beautiful, is you get into this peak performance zone. You know, they talk about the flow state and the brain research of, you know, those days where you feel like everything was working for you. And I think speed golf puts you in there naturally or automatically, because you don't have time to be overly analytical and process and ruminate and do like they do on TV where they say the player has 147 yards to the pin and the wind's blowing 5 miles per hour. He's going to choose an 8 iron. No, he's going to choose a 9. You know, we're only walking around with a tiny little bag with like 5 or 6 clubs. So I have to create these different shots. I have to invent the proper shot with the clubs I'm working with, because it's in between whatever perfect club I might use when I'm playing all day. And the cool thing that a lot of competitors find when they're playing these tournaments is they score as good or better than when they're playing with 5 hour time and a caddy and 14 clubs in the bag, because you're loose and you're free and you walk up to the green and you just feel the break of the green and you hit a putt as your natural intuition, your natural athletic ability will dictate, rather than analyzing everything and getting all tense and worked up about it. So that part, and also the fact that you get a great workout out there, makes it just a wonderful sport. And then for busy people like you, you can literally go out there. I oftentimes play right before dark. So I'll go to the course. It's pretty much closed down or everyone's almost done. And I'll go start on the front nine and I'll play half the course in 30 minutes and I'll go home for dinner. It's like, you know, time efficient.
Oh my God, that's genius. That's so genius. Like, you could get, wait, twilight hour. So if you didn't have a membership, you can score that. And then you go through quick. Oh my gosh. And you get your workout. You know, I'm always up for a 2-for-1. So I think I'm going to have to figure out the speed golfing thing. Because man, that seems like it's definitely my speed in terms of how I like to roll.
Yeah. And any golfer can go out there and just try it, even for a few holes. You don't have to be like a superstar runner. You can just briskly walk. But if you get out of that, that overly analytical mindset and just, you know, measure to go up there and hit the ball without a practice swing and then hustle up to the next shot, you'll quickly lock into this natural athletic mindset where you're just going with the flow, you're reacting to what's in front of you, you're not thinking about it, and it's a great experience for any golfer. Hopefully we'll get more people out there. It's not the most popular sport. Most people haven't heard of it, but we have a passionate group and we travel to a world championship every year where everybody gathers and, you know, talks through the matters of the day in the speed golf community. Really fun.
Wow. Well, sign me up, because it definitely sounds my speed. Like, it just, it's perfect for me. Perfect for the ADD individual who's always trying to get a workout in. All right. So the cold plunge stuff. Like Wim Hof, of course, kind of like the guru in terms of telling everybody to get cold and do all these different cold challenges. Who challenged you to your first dunk in a cold vat of water? I would love to know.
Oh my gosh. I guess I could give credit to my friend Dave Cobrin, who had in his master bedroom an ice maker. So he had an ice machine and he was making these big chunks of ice and dropping them into his bathtub, going for a run, filling up the bathtub, coming in. And it was a pretty elaborate scene there. In the early days of cold plunging, you know, people would buy, including myself, I bought a farm livestock tub. And you fill it up with 70 gallons of water, but the temperature is different throughout the year and all that. So finally, I think the ultimate expression of this this health practice is to invest in a chest freezer, the top opening chest freezer like you store meat in. But instead, you fill it up with water and then you can plug it in on a timer system to keep that water at the desired temperature. And I keep mine between 36 and 38 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's just above freezing. Sometimes there's ice chunks in there you got to move out of the way. And I've become a real enthusiast, Janine. I'm not some special hardcore dude who can, you know, handle the elements better than anybody. In fact, I'm usually the first guy to get cold during the swim workout or when we're water skiing in Lake Tahoe. I'm the guy that needs an extra blanket, and I'm a little bit fragile in that way. But by doing this practice every single morning, I can kind of overcome a lot of these fears or this this hesitation to go put your body under exposure to extreme temperatures. And there's so many benefits, and I've been studying it now. I'm working on a book about the subject because I think there's a lot of potential for many different beneficial reasons. One of them is the hormonal boost, the scientific validation that, you know, I've done a lot of brain research and hormonal research where if you expose to cold temperature, guess what? You jump out and you feel energized and invigorated. And everybody knows that from jumping in the sound in the middle of winter, the polar bear club, or going into your frozen lake. And, you know, the Finns have been doing this for up to 1,000 years now, practicing sauna with usually the saunas are built on the edge of the icy lake. And so they'll jump in the water and come back in the sauna. So this temperature therapy is nothing new, but to do it in a focused manner like I do, where I'm saying I go downstairs every morning, I jump in the tub, I feel like it's made me a person who is more resilient and more focused against all other forms of stress that I face in daily life, because I have the ability to make my body do this. Tony Robbins is a big proponent of cold exposure, and he says, it's my mind telling my body what to not hesitate, but to act. And when we can get better and better at that, rather than wondering if, how's our motivation today? Oh, I didn't feel like writing my book today. I wasn't motivated, or I wasn't motivated to go to the gym. I was too tired after my busy day at work. You know, these things a lot of times get in the way of doing what's in our best interest. So am I motivated? Is it a really pleasurable experience to go and relax in a 36 degree tub of water? Not really, because I have a jacuzzi nearby, which is 104, and I much prefer that after a long, busy, stressful day. But this act of going in first thing in the morning is really the hormonal boost, the wake-up call that I get, and also that building of focus and resiliency that applies to all other areas of my life. I think there's some other interesting potential in regard to fat burning and losing excess body fat, using this as sort of a adjunct to your dietary practices. And that's getting some interesting research picking up. But all in all, it's a fascinating subject. And I think a lot of people, you don't have to go get your chest freezer. I kind of jumped into that since you asked. But if you start your day with ending your nice morning warm shower with 2 minutes of cold, or 30 seconds of cold, 30 seconds of warm if you're really wimpy and you want to see what it's all about. If you end with 2 minutes of cold and take some deep breaths and breathe through the experience rather than panic and shriek and tense up, that's when you'll realize the power, like Wim Hof has tapped into, of using breath control to overcome the initial fight or flight response that we get when we're exposed to cold water. So I know I'm talking a lot, but I should mention that when I get into that tub, I submerge myself and I hold my breath until I need to breathe. Don't try this at home until you're, you know, a little comfortable. But I don't want to hold my breath too long. I'm not trying to break any records, but I'm down under the water for maybe 20 seconds. And during that time, I'm not at all concerned about cold water. I'm just, you know, concerned about emerging and regaining my breath. So when I start to breathe, I take these deep diaphragmatic breaths. I go through a cycle of 20 deep diaphragmatic breaths where I'm really focusing on the in and out. And it's sort of a meditative experience where I'm just thinking about my breathing and taking these really strong breaths. And when I can lock in to that breathing focus, I don't really notice the cold water. I'm not getting uncomfortable or shivering or reacting with a panic reaction, because otherwise it'd be silly. It'd be stupid. I mean, what am I doing going in there to torture myself? So I stay in for a requisite amount of time to get these hormonal benefits, but I'm never staying in to the point of being uncomfortable or shivering or really suffering. Otherwise, you know, it's not a health experience. It's just a macho show-off experience. So I want people to understand that distinction, that I'm doing this breathing exercise, just like Wim Hof. He set the world record for being packed in ice for an hour and 45 minutes. And he had electrodes, you know, he was wired up. They were watching his heart rate. They're making sure he was perfectly healthy while he was doing this. Now, the average participant would die in about 15 to 20 minutes of being packed in ice, but he was able to overcome that nervous system response and be comfortable and maintain a stable, healthy body temperature while being packed in ice. So it's kind of a cool exploration of our human limits, our human potential, and How about that for a long-winded answer?
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. Because, I mean, we did talk about, you know, bringing up the concept of building, resilience. We talked about, you know, AKA being superhuman in some cases. But for other folks, you know, yes, there's Wim Hof and his grand experiment there. But there's also what you're doing, which is building resilience one day at a time. And I think this is something really important for folks to think about, that, you know, you could do a cold plunge once and yeah, that brings a little bit up there, but when you're doing it repetitively, you're actually tapping into that parasympathetic nervous system. And that's where we all need to live a little bit more, since that's kind of my land of loving to get folks into parasympathetic nervous system land.
So I'm asking you now, I suppose the idea when you're jumping into cold water, you're getting a sympathetic stimulation, but by working through it and then getting out, I guess you're getting that counter-regulatory responses, that's what we're trying to achieve when we do these things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because yeah, the initial, holy cow, it's gonna stimulate your sympathetic nervous system like no other. And the first probably 20 probably at least times you do it, it's going to be a stronger response. But over time, this is just a way to work on controlling your nervous system response. It's almost like being in war and you're sitting in a dark, you know, corner and people are shooting bullets everywhere around you. You have to work to bring your nervous system down and into a chill state. And unfortunately, I think a lot of us don't realize how much our busy lifestyles and what we do and how much we put on our schedules is much like warfare to our bodies. And being more resilient to all of this stress is huge. I'm a fan of the cold therapy. I grew up in the last town in Lake Michigan before you get to Wisconsin, and a lot of my good friends had cabins up in Lake, right on Lake Superior up in Michigan, like UP. And I got used to this stuff. And I will be honest, I do not have a freezer that opens here, but I definitely will give myself a nice, good, cold shower every so often. It's invigorating, but I like it. There's almost like a little bit, and I think you probably could attest to this, there's almost a little bit of an endorphin hit that you get from it.
Oh, mercy. I mean, this is Dr. Rhonda Patrick has referenced these studies in detail. She has a free PDF you can download from her website about the benefits of cold exposure. But there's this prominent Finnish study where participants were exposed to 40 degree, they were submerged in 40 degree water for only 20 seconds. Okay, so anyone can handle 20 seconds. And with that 20-second exposure, they experienced a 200 to 300% increase in norepinephrine. That's the prominent focusing, motivation, alertness hormone that lasted for up to an hour after their brief submersion into cold water. So I've been fooling around with this, and you can look on YouTube. There's a video called Unfrozen Caveman Runner. For those of us of the proper age group, remember the Unfrozen Caveman Lawyer from Saturday Night Live, Phil Hartman's character. It was hilarious. But the Unfrozen Caveman Runner was me doing my morning cold plunge. And then one day I kind of got a delayed chill, which happens occasionally where you're in the office working 20 minutes later, and I started to shiver as a delayed response to my cold plunge. And so I put on a few clothes and took off running down the street to kind of warm up. And what happened was I barely notice the exertion at all because I was cold and I was rewarming first my lungs. I could feel my lungs warm up and then I could feel my leg muscles, the big muscle groups. And I was just running down the street and all I could think about was rewarming to the extent that I didn't notice the usual strain of running. And I got a long way away from my house before I realized, man, I'm going to go on an hour run here, which is longer than I usually go. But I didn't feel any sense of exertion. And I started to do some research about this. I consulted with some of the world's leading experts in cold therapy and wondering what was going on. And there is a mechanism where you can reduce your perceived exertion when you're experiencing that hormonal high, that norepinephrine boost. And it's really interesting. You can't really mess around with this because when your joints are cold and you try to go exert yourself or head to a CrossFit workout, and my friend Dave, the guy who got me into this, he one time finished his cold therapy treatment in the tub and went and did an incredible series of pull-up sets, better than he's ever done before. And he subsequently got tennis elbow for months afterward. He injured his joints because his muscles weren't fully warm. But when the brain is cooled down, when the body temperature is cooled down, you eliminate one of the major variables of perceived exertion, of how hard you're working out, is the elevation of body temperature. That's why you feel like quitting when you're in spin class or CrossFit class or you're running a 10K race, is your body temperature is getting too high and your central nervous system, the central governor theory, this is from Dr. Tim Noakes, will shut down the activity of your muscles to protect yourself from that perceived heat-induced damage if you continued to work out and got your temperature up to 104. So I figure out that there's this window after my cold exposure where I can sort of get free workout time where it's not really counting against, you know, my my ability to, you know, handle a certain amount of training in a week's time. So on the video that I made, I warmed up very well. I ran for at least 30 minutes, maybe 40 minutes of running to get my body temperature back up to normal. But again, I was still in that hormonal high state from the cold exposure. And so I went to the track and ran these sprint workouts. And it was like better than I've ever felt. I felt incredibly explosive and powerful because I was capitalizing on the hormonal high with a body that had been rewarmed. Just crazy stuff. And most of your listeners are like, who the heck is this guy? What's he talking about? But the takeaway point is, I think if you can get into that shower head for 2 minutes and take some deep breaths and breathe through it instead of react and prepare yourself in advance. You listen to the podcast, you're going to go try this stuff, get ready to crank that thing to cold and breathe through that experience. You will get a wonderful sensation that you just achieved something remarkable and also get the hormonal boost from that, you know, that short-term exposure to cold water. So it's kind of fun for anyone to just dabble in it. And I'm sure we've all jumped in a lake at some point in our life and jumped out and felt invigorated. So you know what I'm talking about. But to bring that into normal everyday life could be really fun, especially since we are subject to so much comfort and convenience and luxury that we've sort of deadened a lot of these resiliency genetic factors that, you know, we evolved as humans. And now they're just you know, taken away by jackets and portable heaters and fireplaces and things that were almost all the time at room temperature instead of being truly human.
Oh, absolutely. We're kind of wimpy now. And for me, you know, looking at what's happening.
I didn't want to say that word, but you go ahead and say it. Yeah, we're kind of wimpy.
I'm saying it. We're kind of wimpy. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit that there are times when, you know, I'm like, give me my heater. I'm freezing. My house is, you know, a 1914 old house and it gets cold in here. And sometimes I'll be like, I'm chilled to the bone. I can't take it. You know, and I'm not saying that I don't even fall in that wimpy category, but I do think as a society and, you know, in person, you know, in me it personally, I would like to be stronger. I'd like to be more resilient. So I'm all in trying to work to do this on a daily basis to move myself forward.
Well, the fact that you got chilled to the bone indicates that you subjected yourself to uncomfortable temperatures and, you know, triggered that response in the body. And I mentioned briefly the potential for fat reduction. It's known very strongly in science that if you lower your body temperature, your body will fight back with an increase in metabolic rate to rewarm. Now, the other thing that happens, and I know we've all experienced this too, when we're out there for a day skiing or hiking in the snow, you have a dramatic increase in appetite when you get your body cold. So in terms of this, there's a little bit of too much talk that getting cold equals weight loss. And from what I've studied, it appears to be that getting cold increases your appetite and increases your metabolic rate. So if you're going for a targeted weight loss strategy, my thinking is that you expose yourself to cold and then you work through any appetite spike that you might experience. And then you kick into, you turbocharge fat burning for that period of time that you're trying to rewarm or recover from your cold exposure. And that can be pretty valuable to lose that last 5 or 10 pounds that's been really difficult to get off with strict dietary intervention and more exercise. So that's sort of another sort of a sneak preview and just might be entertaining for the listener to think about for a little bit. But I think we're on to something. We're going to see that coming up in the future where that's part of a methodology for fat reduction.
Oh, I absolutely agree. I wish that I would have listened to you talk at some point when I lived in the mountains of Colorado, because I was hungry all the time. And people complain about a lot, right? They go on their hiking, they go on their snowshoe, they go on their ski tour, and they're like, oh my God, I ate like my whole bag of, my snack mix, and I'm trying to lose weight and I'm doing all this exercise for it, and you end up gaining weight. So I wish I would have heard that a little bit more. Power through it. You don't need the whole bag of your trail mix on your trip.
Well, as a lot of your listeners know, all these things are fine and dandy if you are fat adapted, if you are metabolically flexible. And if you're stuck in this carbohydrate dependency dietary pattern, which the vast majority of the developed world is in right now, then none of these things work. And so you hear people talk about fasting, and it's such a big part of the keto scene and the ancestral health scene that, we've both been in for quite a long time. All that stuff only really works if you've done the hard work of eliminating the junk food from your diet so that you're pretty good at burning fat. And then if you fast until 12 noon instead of eat a breakfast and eat a lunch and eat a dinner and do repeat every single day and snack in between those meals, then you can escape from this disastrous consequences of being overfed and producing too much insulin throughout your lifespan, which is the number one way to accelerate aging and invite disease. So once we kind of have a baseline where we can have this conversation with a person who is fat adapted, is metabolically flexible, can skip a meal comfortably without passing out on the ground, or go on a hike without slamming the whole bag of trail mix, you kind of have to work toward that goal. And one of the ways to do it is, try to go do a workout in a fasted state after you've cut out that high insulin producing foods from your diet. But until then, we're talking about setting up for all kinds of failure because you're dependent upon external feedings of carbohydrate as your main source of energy.
Absolutely. Let's talk about metabolic flexibility a little bit more, because I don't want to leave it just there. I think this is a huge topic in terms of really with resilience, because, we might find ourselves, the car breaks down, we're in the middle of a national forest, in the middle of nowhere. Let's go to like southeastern Oregon, the Weehee National Forest, most desolate of one of the forests here in the U.S. So your car breaks down. You don't have anything but just a little bit of food to get you through. Having some metabolic flexibility is huge here, because now if you don't have your ding-dongs and ho-hos and Cheetos, what are you going to do? So this, I like to think about this on my podcast and kind of pose this stuff to folks in terms of, we need this resilience for the what ifs in life and if you're training.
What if you don't want to die and get cancer and get type 2 diabetes and all these other things? That's a pretty big what if. And unfortunately, we've been socialized with the wrong message in many ways, where we've been told since we were young to finish all your food and have a good breakfast, the most important meal starting the day. You got to get that food in there. When I coached soccer and the other sports, the mothers would be doting on the little children in the middle of a freaking soccer game. They'd wander over when the kids subbed out to see if they wanted some cheese and crackers. And oh my gosh, it got, it's so heartbreaking. heartbreaking to me to see that, of course, these people are well-meaning. No offense intended, moms, when you bring the little bag of grapes and the sliced apples to the soccer game. But like, if a little kid can't make it through an hour-long soccer game without having two orange slices and four grapes, we got big-time problems. And same with the adult going into the store and buying the energy gels and the energy bars and the powdered substances to, you know, prepare us for workouts, consume during the workout, and then consume immediately after the workout. So we turn into these beasts that are carbohydrate dependent, and it's a real disaster. So the sooner the better, if you can take one small step forward for yourself and for mankind today, is to try to delay those meals, you know, delay your first meal until you experience true sensations of hunger. Because most of us can go pretty well when we wake up and go the first hour of the day, maybe the second hour, without requiring a massive feeding of calories. And then when it is time to eat, get rid of those high insulin stimulating foods so that you can continue to leverage that fat burning potential that we all have. But unfortunately, as soon as we slam our first drink of orange juice or reach for an energy bar at 2 p.m. and put in 38 grams of carbohydrates into our system, we shut down our potential for fat burning, and we have to burn through this cheap and dirty energy source that we've just consumed.
Do you think anybody really needs energy bars?
These amazing practitioners at the edges of the ancestral health movement, Brian Johnson, my main man at Ancestral Supplements, he does a 5-day fast every quarter, and in advance of his 5-day fast, he does an absolutely brutal depleting workout. Such as his barbarian workout. You can see that on my website, bradkearns.com, and click on MOFO. He does this hour-long workout where he's dragging a sled full of weight. He's wearing a weighted pack that's like 70 pounds. He's carrying two 70-pound kettlebells. And it's just this torture session that will deplete all his glycogen. And then he goes into a 5-day fast, totally glycogen depleted, to enhance the effects of the fast and the autophagy and the organ regeneration and all those things. This is something that's way out of range from most people, but I think most of us can get up in the morning and assess whether we have a true sensation of hunger or not. And when it's time to eat that first meal, eat a really nutrient-dense, colorful, nutritious, satiating meal that doesn't spike insulin. And then you can start build this momentum. And I had to experience this myself, Janine, when I switched over to a primal ancestral style diet in 2008. I was used to eating a ton of food because I was a professional triathlete. I trained all day long for years and years and would slam so many calories. That's all I did was eat, sleep, and train. So I had to train my body as well to get competent at functioning without constant ingestion of outside calories. And it takes a little adjustment time. But the good thing about switching over to this lifestyle is that you can eat these satisfying meals. You can have a big, huge, delicious omelet with bacon and avocado slices and salsa and cheese and vegetables inside. And that can be a really nutritious meal that doesn't spike insulin, because I didn't mention many carbohydrates. And then you feel fine. You feel nourished, you feel energized, you're just teaching your body to use fat as the primary source of fuel instead of carbohydrate.
And I think that's where a lot of us need to be thinking these days, you know, with the rise of diabetes and with weight going up and up and up with a lot of folks and insulin resistance on top of that. I mean, it's a big deal. It is a really big deal to consider metabolic flexibility. So guys, I'm going to put some more info on it at drjkrausnd.com and thehealthfixpodcast.com, because I think that it's an important topic in addition to the cold plunges too. Now, I want to switch directions a little bit. I need to know about your ancestral supplement that has your name on it there. And, it looks like Rocky Mountain oysters ground up in there. So tell us a little bit more about the male optimization formula.
Yes, for our YouTube viewers, I'm showing a bottle. This, I guess it's a product plug in the middle of a nice, pleasant podcast interview. But what's interesting is, you know, we're always looking for ways to optimize, and especially in the competitive athlete scene, I will do anything with my diet, with my sleep strategies. I'll jump in the cold water, looking for an edge. And in the ancestral world, it's become a pretty prominent and well-accepted topic that consuming the animal organs are arguably the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet, liver being at the top of the list, where the nutritional profile, pound for pound, or in comparison to a hamburger or a steak, the muscle meat, which is high in certain things, but it's deficient on a lot of these other nutrients that are found in more density in organ meats, that's the rationale for trying to include these into your diet. I mean, there's no comparison to a slice of liver versus a kale salad. You're just going to have, you know, vastly more vitamin A and all these things that are difficult to obtain in the diet. And so with the ancestral supplements, they've bottled up these organ meats into a pill form. If you haven't been cooking your liver and your kidneys and your heart and your bone marrow from your bone broth on a regular basis, it's a way to kind of enhance the nutrient density of your diet in a convenient manner. So Brian Johnson, the guy I mentioned, we kind of came up with this idea to target male hormone optimization, preserving those testosterone levels as we age through the decades in life, because testosterone obviously is the ultimate expression of your male essence. It's kind of misunderstood in the layman's terms, where, you know, someone cuts you off in traffic and flips you off, and you to say that person has too much testosterone. But really, testosterone is kind of an adaptive hormone to whatever peak performance, cognitive or physical challenge you're engaged in. So it gives you the ability to focus, to have your brain function at optimal levels, to have your muscles perform and also recover better from whatever you're doing. So it's really, really important to, you know, maintain a healthy sex hormone profile. And today, oh my gosh, there's a litany of things that are trashing our testosterone. One of them is excess insulin production, like we already talked about. One of them is insufficient sleep. One of them is being a jerk to your girlfriend and getting in arguments because you're selfish and lack self-awareness. And so all these things, the estrogenic compounds in the environment, the things that you do in your professional practice trying to get people healthy, a lot of these attack our male essence and cause an acceleration of the aging process to the extent that it's so common that we think it's normal. So guys my age are 55. Their main sport is watching the NFL on Sunday. Hey, Russell Wilson, number 3, I'm number 12. I got a jersey. I'm the 12th man. Fantastic. You know, that's their athletic experience. Even though back in the day, everyone's got a story about back in the day when they were on the college baseball team, or they used to run half marathons, and then they did the obstacle course races. And then, you know, over time, we just kind of retreat into a spectator-oriented lifestyle instead of trying to keep our toes on the starting line and do something that has meaning and that builds our fitness and delays the aging process. So, you know, this organ supplement is a collection of animal organs that are targeted for testosterone optimization. And that would be, like you said, Rocky Mountain oysters is a code name for grass-fed bovine testicle, prostate, liver, heart, and bone marrow. So it's just a super nutrient-dense supplement. And then there's a lot of belief in the ancient ancestral healing world and ancient Chinese medicine that consuming the corresponding organ of the animal will nourish the functioning of the organ in your body. And there's some science validating that in terms of the nutrient density of a certain organ is the same profile as you're getting. So if you have a weak heart and you consume heart, you're going to get a lot of CoQ10. Everyone knows that's going to have a positive benefit. So just on the scientific level, it's highly validated. And then there's also the ancestral tradition that if you want to discount that, go ahead. But, you know, the Chinese medicine experts have been doing this for 4,000 or 5,000 years, and it's got to mean something. So it's sending these call them cofactors, molecular biodirectors. They're sending a message when you're consuming testicle to have your own testicular function and your prostate function optimized. And that's the story of the mofo.
I like it. Yeah, a lot of communication there with the organ meats, the organ products. I mean, as an acupuncturist myself, I learned all about this stuff. And yeah, there's no way that 5,000 years of Chinese medicine could be wrong in this case. I feel like it's a time-tested thing here, and I think it's awesome. I would love a lot of my patients to see your product, because I have a lot of guys that'll come in. My practice is very heavily firefighter, and a lot of them are like, give me the cream, doc. Give me the shots. And I'm like, no, Can't we talk about something else? And it's a hard go. So I think if I've got a guy who's doing it, showing, you know, and that, and, you know, just showing that it can work, I think I got some leverage there. So hopefully I can get my folks looking at that a little bit and have them take, you know, a second thought instead of just hitting up the shot so much.
Oh, thanks. If you look on that link, I said bradkearns.com and then hit MOFO. I have this thing called the MOFO mission, and it's 10 lifestyle objectives, because I don't want to just be selling pills. You can do enough of that on Amazon with testosterone boosters. You know, we're really proud of the supplement. We know it works, and it works fantastically well. And there's reviews to that extent that you can read on Amazon. But the other 10 attributes of the MOFO mission are doing things like optimizing your diet, getting rid of the sugar and the refined grains, prioritizing your sleep habits. And then I'm also a big fan of the emotional stuff and the relationship-oriented stuff. I had the legendary John Gray on my podcast twice. He's the number one best-selling relationship author of all time with the Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus series. And his latest book, Beyond Mars and Venus, talks about the hormonal underpinnings behind healthy relationship dynamics and how a healthy male-female partnership can help the male optimize his testosterone, because his driving biological force in life is to be the hero in the story and to protect his female partner and to do right by her and be the breadwinner and caretaker of the home and put the sandbags out when the flooding occurs during the storm. And then on the female side, the female wants to be cherished and taken care of and feel connected and bonded and all those things, which involves perhaps long conversations where you allow the female to vent after her busy, stressful workday without offering advice or correction or, you know, negative commentary. And that way, the female can rebalance her estrogen levels and feel like in her full female glory. And so these are wonderful elements to throw into, you know, my experiences as my expertise is as an athlete. I'm not an acupuncturist or a medical doctor, but I know about peak performance. I know about taking care of the body. But when you start to mix these things all together and you realize we have so much more potential to live an enjoyable, healthy, high energy life than we might be stuck in right now, that's when it gets pretty exciting. I think that's what's cool about the podcast world, Janine, and what you're doing is you get these guests on, you offer your own advice and consultation, you mix with the guests, the listeners sitting back, absorbing all this stuff. And geez, pretty soon, maybe, you know, if they just listen to your podcast, they won't need to be a patient anymore. They'll be fantastic just from taking the information and running with it. Not really, because I'm a huge fan of acupuncture. And boy, when I was an athlete, I was in there once a week. I was in massage once a week, chiropractic once a week, acupuncture once a week. I can't admit to doing the same now. I'm a little too busy for all that stuff. But when my life was revolving around athletic peak performance, all those things had tremendous value to help me recover faster from the stress I was putting my body under. And same with the firefighter. The stress is there. They're not going to get perfect Brad Kearns recommended sleep every night because they're going to be disrupted. But what do you do to combat that? There's all kinds of things you can do. One of them is optimize that diet for sure.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. The diet's huge. It's huge for so many people. So we have covered a plethora of things, from cold plunges to working on male hormone optimization. We talked a little bit about speed golfing. I really want to know, because you and I chatted about what your passion is and what you're passionate about and how to keep that passion going to, you know, in life. And so I would love to hear one thing for our listeners about what keeps you ticking. What is that one thing that keeps you going to keep the passion, to just keep moving, keep being better, keep being more resilient?
Oh man, I love getting put on the spot here without a prepared answer. I can think of two things, but one would be, it would be tough. I might have to offer both of them up.
You can give me as many as you want.
Well, you know, one of them is to be in service and spread the word to others. Because if I'm just in a lonely mountain cabin, and optimizing my life with my cold plunge and my red light therapy and my wonderful workouts and lifting more weight and pulling more resistance on my cords every day and writing it in my book, who the heck cares? You know, it doesn't have much value until you're sharing and connecting and motivating and inspiring others. And that's a position I've put myself in with my career pursuits. So I want to be a great father and a role model and a great partner in my marriage and all that kind of stuff. And that's, you know, thinking outside of yourself and how you can contribute to other people's lives. And it sounds maybe a little trite, but I think today, like I started the show saying, you know, back in the old days, social connection was more natural and more a bigger part of our life. Where today we can indulge and entertain ourselves to the extent that we can live alone just fine for our entire lives and order up the food and engage in superficial relationships because now we have the applications to do so and move on to the next thing. And it's a little scary. So, you know, being in service to others and seeing how you can contribute to your family, your community, all that is a big one. And then if you want to throw in another one, I'm really interested in kind of aging gracefully and delaying these inevitabilities that we have come to accept as normal, because they're absolutely not normal. And when you look at these outliers who have done a great job, making Dara Torres made the Olympic team at age 41 in swimming and swam faster than she did when she won gold medals when she was earlier. Herschel Walker's fighting in the MMA cage at age 53 after his football career. And, you know, these people, we shake their heads and go, wow, what an athletic freak. There's a guy on YouTube, one of my heroes, that he runs the quarter mile in under a minute and he's 70 years old, Charles Alley, because I like running the quarter and doing some track stuff too. And so these people are out there making it happen. My father is another great example I should mention. He made it till 2019. He passed at age 97 after an incredible life of peak performance. He was one of the best golfers in the world over age 90, possibly the best. And he performed at a high, high, high level until the very end. In the last couple of years, he started to get more tired. He started to take fewer outings. He stopped playing golf at a certain point. He stopped doing this at a certain point, stopped doing that, and then took more naps and then went away as gracefully as you could ever imagine a human. So people say, I'm sorry about your father. I'm like, I'm not. He had the greatest life you could ever dream of because he took care of himself and he refused to accept that as an old guy, he, you know, shouldn't be out there playing golf and competing and taking money off younger guys like his son. So he was a great role model in that sense because he had that competitive spirit in him where he still wanted to excel. He would go take golf lessons with my other brother once a week. They'd drive over on Thursdays and this guy would teach him how to, you know, chip better or give him a putting tip. And this is a guy who's 93, 94, 95 years old, still out there keeping score and competing and wanting to get better. So I take that inspiration too, where I'm setting athletic goals for myself. If you're watching on YouTube, there's a picture of me high jumping in the background. I'm trying to beat my high jump PR this year. I hired a former Russian Olympic triple jumper as my coach. He's watching me. He's critiquing my videos. And it's silly stuff. I mean, I'm in an empty high school track, unloading the pit myself and taking a few jumps. And it's nothing that's going to, you know, make it into the Olympics. But to me, it matters and it's important and I care about it and I desperately want to get better. Same with that goofy sport of speed golf that nobody knows about. It's important to the people who are participating. And if you can tap into some form of that magic, besides wanting the Seahawks to win again and make it all the way to the, you know, the NFL championship, that's great too. But that's not about you. That's about number 12 on the sideline. That's why it says 12 and there's only 11 players. So I think if we can throw that into the mix of having something that gets, that lights your fire, that answers your question rhetorically. It's like, what lights your fire? Well, whatever it is that does, go for it and you know, go all out and push yourself and challenge yourself.
Oh my goodness. That was well said. You guys, light it up and kick some ass. That's what we got there. I love it. I love it. Brad, thanks for coming on. I'm glad that we got to connect after our technological issues today. This is awesome. I would love for you to tell everybody where to find you on the Get Over Yourself podcast, what's going on with that book coming out, and just give us the scoop.
find me on the Health Fix podcast by Dr. Janine Krause. It's wonderful. It's incredible. And that's the best place. Oh, they already found me there. Okay. Yeah. The Get Over Yourself podcast is pretty fun. So go over and check out bradkearns.com. You can see all the things I'm doing, and don't spend too much time on social media, people. It can get out of hand. So I'm not even going to tell you where to find me. But I put stuff up there like everybody else. We're all obligated to play this game, but man, keep some boundaries up and go out there and jump in the cold water. Think of me. You don't even have to go on social media. Just do it.
There you go. Well said.
Hey, Health Junkies, Dr. Janine Krause here. I hope you enjoyed my podcast. Guess what? I have a Facebook group. It's called Anti-Aging Health Tips with Dr. Janine Krause. So if you want a little bit more of the Health Fix podcast, head over to my Facebook group and let's chat. Now I'm also offering a health transformation and restoration program. It's a one-on-one with me, and it's for folks who are sick and tired of going to doc after doc and health coach after health coach and not seeing the results that they want and deserve. In my program, I'm working with folks with transformation. So this isn't just a light program. This is a big deal. I'm going to change how you think about your health and your life kind of program. And I'm super excited to offer it to folks. And if you are at all interested, we should talk. I'm offering 45 minutes free with me chatting to see if and how I can help you. And you can get all the details over at my website, drjkrausend.com. All right. You've survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Have a great day, whatever you're doing.
Subscribe, rate, and share info.
Da 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 da.